Hi, I'm Nina, and I'm an alcoholic and addict. And I've been sober since February 12th, 2015, and for that I'm truly grateful. Nice. Okay, 20 minutes. I really suck at time, so y'all forgive me if I look at the clock a lot. Okay, so 33. I was born and raised in Dhahran, Saudi Arabia. I lived there until I was 10. My dad's from Louisiana, my mom's from England, and I have one sister. She's a year and 9 days older than I am. However, she acts like she's a lot older than me. She and I are night and day, and she takes after my dad, who I do not get along with that well, and I take after my mom, who is my angel. So all growing up, she and I just kind of fought tooth and nail. We still, you know, had a strained relationship. Obviously, the drinking and drugging didn't help at all. When I grew up, we grew up traveling around the world. I was really blessed that I got to do that at a young age, and I have a lot of memories that I'll carry with me for the rest of my life. Most of them good, some of them pretty terrible. Saw some things that I, you know, no little kid should have to see, but it also did help, you know, shape the way that I am. My parents were big partiers, and so they had people over a ton, and it was just liquor everywhere, and, darts, and they were having a good time, it seemed like, you know, and I'd sit on the bar, and I'd refeather the darts for them, because they were too drunk, and I had no idea that they were wasted. It's just everyone was laughing and having a lot of fun until, everyone left, and I'd always try and wait up to make sure my dad would go to bed or he'd make it to bed okay. And there were more than a few times that I would find him, like, you know, passed out on the kitchen floor. And my mom eventually just told us to just kind of leave him, not try and pick him up or take him to bed. So I grew up with, obviously, an alcoholic father. My mother is a very hard drinker. She is not an alcoholic. She has now changed her lifestyle a lot. But they fought heavily when we were little, too. I was 10. Actually, before that, during the Gulf War, we were evacuated, my mom, my sister, and I. So we left my school, my friends, my father had to stay behind. And we didn't know how long we were going to be in England. So my sister and I started school there, started riding, doing everything that we did in Saudi. But, you know, I didn't know anybody, so I had to find all new friends, and then they brought us back to Saudi and didn't have a whole lot of time to say goodbye to our friends in England, my family over there. We just kind of went back, so that was pretty hard both times, leaving friends, and when we came back to Saudi, it was completely different. A lot of people weren't there anymore that I never got to see again, and then finally in 93, my dad kind of had enough, and he retired early, and again, it wasn't like, we didn't have like months to prepare. I don't know really why it kind of happened the way it did, but it seemed like my sister and I were told that we were going to move. And then it was like 3 weeks later and we were on a plane to the States. So, I'll never forget my best friend, Tark. He was standing in the road as our station wagon drove off, and I was just looking behind him and waving at him. And that was the last time I saw him. And we're friends on Facebook, you know. Facebook's awesome. So I still get to talk to some of my friends from Saudi and Facebook, but it's not the same. So when I was growing up, I was pulled away from a lot of people that I loved a lot, it seemed like. I guess those three times was a lot for me. So when I moved to Austin, it was a culture shock. I went to Lake Travis, and everyone was white, and it was weird. In Saudi, we were the minority, but I did really good in school. I've always been a hard worker in school. I was not a popular kid. When I moved to Austin, as the first part of me that started to feel that I didn't belong, that I was out of place, that I had something missing kind of inside. I was not cool. I did not know the movies. I did not know the music. I dressed really weird. Excuse me. And so the only thing that kind of saved my self-esteem, even in the slightest at that point, was that I played sports and I was good at sports. That kind of got me through. When I was 12, I was diagnosed with clinical depression. went to some really dark places at a young age and got put on some medication that I refused to take because I didn't want to have to take pills to be normal, you know. Now looking back, that's a big part of my story, actually. So I started drinking when I was 14, and from the very start of my drinking, I drank alcoholically. I remember the first time my friend's sister, who was a senior, she snuck us out, and it was a senior party, and, you know, they lined up shots, and Rachel took one and went and sat down, and I think I took, like, four or five throughout the night, and it was great, you know. I was getting all this attention from everybody, especially guys, which is what I craved back then. Didn't have a very strong father figure, and so that was when I kind of knew that this is what I wanted to do, this is what makes me feel good, I can do this, and I can be a part of, you know. So I think playing sports and actually still wanting to be good at school kind of saved me throughout high school. I did make a reputation for myself with drinking and using and with guys. And I, towards the end of, you know, my senior year, I was ready to get out of there. So my sister went to UT, I went to A&M. And I used the excuse of I wanted to be an engineer, which, I mean, technically I did, but and they had a really good engineering school, but I could have done that at UT. You know, what I wanted to do was run away from what I had created here, and I wanted to start over. So I ran, and I went to school, and I played club volleyball for A&M, which, again, kind of saved me. But then I started to bartend, and it's a perfect job for an alcoholic. So bartending became more important than school, became more important than anything. And probably towards the middle of my junior year, it's when I found Adderall. And it just started, you know, like, need to pull all-nighters for some kind of test or something. And then it definitely showed me that I can drink a whole lot more on Adderall, right? So I got to be, it was like $130 every two-day habit. And it got to be where my dealer was like, dude, you need to stop. And I didn't know I had a problem. I didn't want to believe that I had a problem at that point, even though I have people who are selling me drugs telling me I need to stop doing drugs, you know. It just didn't click. So I drank myself out of school. I still was just jumping from man to man, you know. I found guys who had what I want and who would let me do what I want. So I was very good at finding the guys who took Adderall, so I could steal it from them. And I was very good at finding the guys who would let me drink as much as I wanted to. It was real easy, just reel them in and get them to like you and then just do whatever you want to. So I was really manipulative, mean, evil. I didn't care. Like, I didn't care who I hurt, who I rolled over. It didn't matter. I just wanted to get what I wanted. And I wanted to get drugs, and I wanted to be drunk all the time. And I mean, we all know the reason for that. You know, I was miserable. I hated myself. I've never had good self-esteem until now. Terrible body image issues. You know, high school, I was 115 pounds, and I kept on telling my mom I was fat, you know, and it is, looking back, it's just crazy. I still have a lot of issues with that today. However, I'm a hell of a lot better than I used to be. So it got really bad with the whole Adderall thing in college. I started killing off relatives, like, left and right, you know, getting out of work. And before they could fire me, I would jump to a new bar. So I would, you know, get trained and be... I was actually a good bartender, you know. I'd get trained and I'd be a great bartender for a couple of months. And then I would start just... I mean, I drank the bar away, you know. And they would make rules about shot limits because of me. And... When it got really bad, I would just move bars. So I did that for a long time, and then finally it got to the point where I didn't have really anywhere to go, and I had a lot of good friends who were really worried about me. And kind of the last straw before I moved back here was I told everyone my sister committed suicide, and it's because people were getting really worried about me. I had had an intervention tried to be put on me, and from some coworkers, and I still didn't identify as an alcoholic or an addict, but telling everybody my sister committed suicide, that was it, you know. That was the last stretch, you know, for me to try and get to do what I wanted in College Station. Because you tell people that and they let you drink all you want to. And feel sorry for you and give you money and, you know, throw bottles at you. And it's great, you know, I didn't care. So I ran away again. I moved back to Austin. I know the term now. I ghosted people. I just left. Like, they had no idea where I went. Never talked to them again. People that I knew for years and who really cared about me. I just didn't care about them. All I cared about was myself. Moved back to Austin, did the whole guy thing. I found this guy who was probably almost as bad as I was, and so we just drank all the time. He was out in the country, so he took me away from my family, and I was isolated. And I was getting back into my real depression and having bipolar episodes, and finally just wanted to kill myself. And I tried to shoot myself in the head, but he tackled me before, thank God. And I got a scholarship to, got state funding to AR a couple of months after that. I went and lived with my parents until I could get in here. And that was 2010. Completed that program. That was my first intro to AA. And that was the first time I was like, okay, maybe I kind of have a problem. Like, I guess I'm trying to kill myself, but it's really not because of drinking. It's just because I hate myself. So I really tried to, like, apply myself in the program the first time, but it just didn't, like, I was going to rehab and doing this for my family, for my parents, you know. I didn't go in it for me. So I was sober. I mean, it was almost 3 years that I didn't have a drink or drug, but I was probably sober for like a year and a half of that. I was dry for the rest of it, just kind of white knuckling. But I met a guy in rehab, probably part of the reason. So he was a heroin addict. He ended up relapsing into his sober home. And one of the first, now looking back, one of the first signs that I knew I was really sick is that I didn't tell on him. I didn't tell people that he was shooting up in his room. I didn't tell anybody. I didn't hold him accountable. I wanted to, you know, protect him. And so he moved out. I moved out into this amazing apartment. I had a job at Progressive Insurance. I was, you know, doing the deal. I got a car. And it was really, really great. And then his addiction went, like, way overboard. And so one night, he had started staying out all night doing meth and drugs. And I was kind of towards the end of my rope, but still hanging on that he was going to be okay. And he came running to me. I was going to work at like 8 o'clock in the morning. And he had shot this chick up for the first time and she overdosed. And so I had to go over there and I didn't know. I mean, I don't know what was going on. He had put her in the tub and done all those things you see on movies and stuff, I guess. I started doing CPR and he hadn't called, you know, the paramedics yet. So they got there and they gave her that shot and she was fine. Thank God. But that was it. So I left him. I'm really glad that I did, but that kind of pushed me over the edge. I used that as an excuse for me to start drinking again. And, I don't know, everyone knows that no one can make you relapse except yourself, but it was a damn good excuse in my head that I might as well start drinking again. So I did that. And then I found a guy who would give me Vicodin for free. So, started doing that, started dating that guy. Just an easy progression. So, got really bad. That was an abusive relationship in every way except physical, thank God. I never got into that part. But I didn't know how to get out of that one. I really didn't. And he totaled my car. I didn't have a car anymore, something that I'd actually been paying off, like one of the first things in my life that I had actually been paying off, like on time and very proud of. And I just thought I was trapped. So he ended up going to jail, getting off on some ridiculous charges that his parents just threw money at the courts, and it really pissed me off. But that was my out, so I got away from him, which was awesome. In the meantime, when I was living with him, I'd overdosed on Tramadol. I was in the ICU for a couple of days. That was scary. I didn't think it was scary at the time, but, you know, poor thing. I scared my mom half to death. I mean, I almost died. Didn't really faze me though. Like I didn't care. I was fine. I was out of the hospital. Where's the Jack Daniels? You know what I'm saying? So he went to jail and got out. I ended up started dating his best friend like right away. Cause he drank Jack just like I did. And so, moved into a house and it came to a head again. You know, I wasn't showering for days. I wasn't eating. I was, you know, getting those little bottles of liquor because that's all I could afford. And just having to stand over the sink and knowing I was going to throw it up, but needing to get it down. So I would just do what I had to do to make sure it got down my throat somehow. I started stealing a lot again to get money for booze. I started selling my Saudi jewelry that I can never get back. That was a really big low for me. And finally, it came to the, I'm going to kill myself again, and I went back to AR. So this time, I was like, okay, dude, I have a problem. I need some help. This is what I want to do. I don't want to die. You know, I don't want to do this anymore. So I went through the program, and I really applied myself, and I really got something out of it. And it was an amazing experience. I met some really great girls. A couple of them are still here, so that's awesome. But it still didn't take. I met a guy right out of rehab, and so kind of same cycle over and over again. It was almost my 90 days, and I almost made it 3 months. Found out I was pregnant, which never happened before. It was one of those yets that I never thought I'd get to. I was always really careful about my female health, and that just kind of floored me. Well, 2 days after that, I ended up relapsing. I don't even know how I got to the liquor store. Like, honestly, that no defense against that first drink. Like, I shouldn't do this. This is bad. I'm pregnant. There was none of that, like, at all. It was just, let's just go get a half pint and it'll be fine. I'll take it back to the sober home. No one will know. Perfect place to drink, you know? So, you know, the disease is progressive, and it did not end with that half pint. I went back to a second liquor store and got a full pint. I went to a third liquor store and got a full pint. Apparently, I went to a fourth liquor store, and at that point decided that I didn't want to be drunk in my sober home anymore, so I was going to drive to a friend's house. So I did, and I sideswiped a lady and flipped my car on 35, and ended up in jail, thank God. My mom had taken herself to Al-Anon, so the $400 bail she was not going to do it at all. I ended up spending 31 days in jail in Travis County, pregnant, hurt really bad, broken collarbone, a nice little scar that they had to get plastic surgeon to fix me up. They don't care if you're hurt in jail. I don't know if anyone's been there before, but they do not care. I was not having a good time, dude. I had to go to wound care at like 4 o'clock every morning. It was just rough. Big part of my story that I'm not proud of, but I am also at the same time. I got an abortion while I was in jail. Probably the most humbling experience I've ever been through. I was in stripes and handcuffs waiting in this waiting room with many people as y'all, you know, sitting there. Had to go twice, handcuffed during the procedure, numb, but God, did that break me down, you know, took all my vanity away. I mean, and this looked gnarly when it first happened. Like, this was not good. My hair was all messed up. I don't know how it shaved off on the asphalt or something, but I used to have really long, pretty hair. And that's what I needed, you know. I'm so glad my mom did not bail me out of jail. Like, that was the worst experience in my life. That was the best thing that's ever happened to me. Because that was it, dude. Like, I am not doing this anymore. Could have killed myself, could have killed somebody else. And I just couldn't. Like, I just couldn't fathom going out there again and trying to do it better this time. Like, I don't even know what that means. Like, I can control it, you know? It obviously not. I relapsed for like 6 hours, you know, and ended up in jail. So that was it. That was my bottom. That was what happened. That was my lightning strike. And that's exactly what I needed. I needed God to break me down to the absolute core, till I was nothing. And I had nothing left except that fight to get back up. You know, I didn't want to give up. And they told me how I didn't have to give up. You know, I come in here and I follow some suggestions and I do a little bit of work and I'll find a freedom. You know, I don't ever have to do that again. And at first I was like, well, I mean, whatever, yeah, right, dude, y'all are all crazy, this is a cult, I don't believe you guys, this whole God thing freaks me out, like, I don't like hearing it, you know, I don't like it at all, but I did it, you know, I did what they told me to do. I got a sponsor, I started reading this book, I started working these steps with another woman, slowly but surely, you know, that miracle started to happen, and, part of what they told me to do was to pray and meditate, and, like, I grew up in you know, a Muslim country. We traveled around the world. We didn't go to church unless we were in England or Louisiana, you know, Catholic or Episcopalian. Like, I had an idea that all of the religions I saw around the world were so beautiful in themselves, but they hated each other. And I was like, how can there be a God over all of this where it just kind of spews hate for one another? I didn't get it. So I used that anger towards God to be like, well, there can't be one, and I don't care. You know, I don't need this. And I used that for, I mean, it stuck with me for a little while, but they still told me to pray and meditate. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to have to try and do something, you know? And what really got me through that point was the word willingness. And I don't know if y'all have noticed in this book, in the big book, the word willingness shows up. I lost count. Like, I was going to try and count and I got bored. And I mean, it's in there so many times, and that's what I clung to. I have to be willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself. And so I slowly became like, okay, this isn't the Christian God. This isn't Hindu God. Like, this isn't anybody's God. This is my God. So I was like, okay, I think I can do that. So 21 months sober on the 12th. Now I haven't had a car. I've been on the bus the whole time. Take 3 buses, 2 hours each way to and from work. Sometimes now I get a ride share, but no, I shouldn't because it costs money. But, you know, every once in a while, I don't like waking up at 4:30. I am not a morning person. I see that from the other way around, or I used to. I've always been a night owl, but I do what I do. And the reason I am so absolutely grateful for the bus to this day is that my first ride was a 20-minute ride, and I put on meditation music, and I didn't know what I was doing, but they told me what I could do and how I could try, and so I did, and I started meditating, and they told me what I could say in prayer and gave me recommendations, but I didn't have to follow a script, and that's what I did on the bus. I started praying, meditating, and it took probably a good 3 or 4 months before I didn't get that burning bush experience by any means, but after I kept doing this work, that's what I came out with, was an amazing spiritual experience that has led me through to me standing here today. I've seen that light, and I see it turn on in other people's eyes, and it's just probably the most amazing thing that I've ever felt in my whole life. I've held a job for 20 months now, which is insane for an alcoholic like me. It's a big girl job. You know, I work property taxes for Chase Bank. They had to fingerprint me an FBI background check, and that was cool to pass because I was like, I don't know what's back there, guys. I don't know what y'all are going to find. But apparently I didn't do anything blackout, so that was cool. But I don't know. Like, life is not easy. It's not pink cloud all the time. Like, it was there for a little while, and that was great. You know, I was riding that pink cloud, and I remember it, too, and I don't ever want to give those memories away. But some bad stuff has happened in sobriety, and it's all about, is your God big enough? Like, is my God big enough to carry me through whatever life's going to throw at me, you know? Like, I mean, people are going to get fired, you know? Pets are going to die. People are going to die. It's all about, is my God big enough? And today I can say, yeah. Like, God has put me through some stuff, some trials and tribulations that at the time, man, not okay with. Like, it sucks. Like, why are you doing this to me? But I was always brought back to the steps with my sponsor and my friends, the recovery community, and these meetings that I go to keep on going. There is an end to it. There's always an end to a dark day, and you have to look at them as blessings because God is just making you stronger for something else that's going to come along later. You're going to need that experience for something else that's going to come along. And if I can look at life that way, you know, if I can see the dark times as a blessing as well, then I think I can go anywhere, you know? And I'm definitely not a girl's girl, or wasn't, so it's weird for me to say. I love the women in this program. Stick with the women, you know, men stick with the men. It really helps. I have an amazing group of people who care about me and how I care about, and I have the capacity to be a good friend, and people care about me like that too. If you can stay out of a relationship, I haven't been in a relationship for a very long time. Longest time in my life, pretty much, only a year. So yeah, which I mean, I, you know, of course I miss it, but all I can say, man, do what they tell you to. Like, these are all suggestions. You don't have to do anything. You know, you don't have to do this. But these people that are telling you what to do, it's because they've done it to you and it's worked for them. So just give it a try, man. It's your life. It's the most beautiful thing you can find. So thanks for letting me share.